Good to see you. Thanks for inviting me.
Describe for us the ways that states have at their disposal to tax fossil fuels.
This is a little different than what we tend to think of with energy taxation, a gasoline excise tax when you pay at the pump, or tax that might be added onto your electricity bill. In this case, I was working with Rachel Hampton from the University of Michigan Law School, looking at what are called severance taxes. What happens when you take a non-renewable natural resource, like oil or gas, from below the surface of the ground, and then remove that for some kind of use? It's not going to be replaced. The oil and gas industry in the U.S. is well established. This really began well in the 19th century in places like Pennsylvania and Ohio. So a number of states historically deep in oil and gas have had these kinds of taxes for a long time, certainly Texas. What is beginning to happen, though, as we begin to move into the shale or fracking era, is that some states that thought they were getting out of the oil gas business are getting back in a big way. Or other places that don't even have much of a history of this at all are jumping in big time, and in some cases dealing with all the regulatory and other questions that emerge with fracking, but then also looking at these taxes, what they should be, how they should be set, and then if you have a bounty, what do you do with the money?
So these, in many instances, are states that we will use the term newbies at all of this. They're not old pros like Texas.
Enter North Dakota. It wasn't that long ago that Rand McNally was thinking of dropping North Dakota out of the atlas. There was not going to be a North Dakota map because it was thought to be so inconsequential. North Dakota is booming. A number of the counties in the U.S. that have the highest rate of per capita income are now in North Dakota. That's all because of oil. And with it has come a bounty to state government. There are two severance taxes in play for the extraction of oil that were set up many, many decades ago. Mm-hmm. And this year it's expected that about 65% of the entire North Dakota budget is going to come from these energy taxes. With it, at the same time, there are lots of strains in North Dakota. The unemployment rate is low, but there are lots of strains, infrastructure and other kinds of things related to fracking. And so a big issue in politics in that state is, again, how do we use these revenues? How do we use this bounty? Do we think about near-term considerations or longer-term? But it also pops up in the pioneer states, places like Alaska and Texas, but also beginning to come up in other areas as well, including some in the Midwest.
What about in Michigan? What's our situation?
The situation in Michigan is that fracking is still a fairly limited activity. There is some oil and gas production. There has been for a long time. Usually Michigan is ranked somewhere between 10th and 20th in terms of the largest gas and oil producers in the country. And there's been a lot of discussion even in southeastern Michigan of expanded activity. That said, that seems to be slowing somewhat in part because of the decline, the dramatic decline in pricing because there's so much supply at this point. So no one is really thinking that Michigan is going to be the next Texas or North Dakota or Pennsylvania. And yet about 0.5% of the Michigan budget this year will come from Michigan's version of a severance tax, which has been in place for a long time. It addresses each amount of oil or gas as it's being removed. Most of that money goes into general revenues, a very small amount, and then a tiny portion of that is put into something called an orphan well fund, which is to manage or close down abandoned well operations. And you can drive in many places in the state and find historic oil and gas operations.
You kind of point out in your study, it's impossible to really do direct comparisons of state severance taxes to say, well, are we making the most of it compared to our neighboring state? Why is that?
Clearly, a severance tax works alongside a whole number of other taxes, corporate taxes. And of course, Michigan has just been through huge reform in that area, taxes on small businesses, other kinds of sales taxes, property taxes. Each state presents a separate mix of questions in terms of taxation and the like. Clearly, though, we think one of the reasons why a number of states have set fairly high taxes historically, and frankly, states we tend to think of as right-of-center and conservative states, tend to have consistently the highest tax rates. These tend to be fairly popular, unlike gasoline taxes, which we may be talking about again soon in Michigan.
Road funding debate, absolutely.
But in the case of severance taxes, most of the oil and gas that most states produced is consumed elsewhere. So if you're talking about Alaska, which has the highest tax rates in the country, Alaska only uses 1% of the oil that it produces. Texas, only 7%. So there's a chance actually to export some of those costs and then impose a price via a tax on the oil and gas as it's being extracted, again, never to return.
Tax away. It's not going to be passed on to our people because they're not using that.
That's right.
But what about if you are in an area where there are shale deposits underground that run across to a neighboring state, so there's some competition?
The plot thickens.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we move into questions of local governments and how they engage in regulation. or even in some case so-called shale plays, deposits that don't honor state borders or boundaries.
No one told shale when those deposits were being made where the state boundary was going to be.
Absolutely. No jurisdictional boundary follows a shale play.
No.
So there's not only the process of hydraulic fracturing, but there's also the horizontal drilling component, which means you can cut across. Now, in most cases, most of the drilling is going to take place within a township or within a county or certainly within a state. But we are beginning to see issues where this begins to emerge. And then an especially interesting question in a great many states that are reaping in a lot of this revenue is, who gets that money and how do you return it? Do you return it to those local governments where the fracking is being done? Do you simply put it into general revenues, as we do in Michigan, as Texas does, as most other states do, and just blend that in with general revenues or a school trust fund or something like that? Do you link it to very special purposes where there could be environmental damage produced by fracking and apply that? So in state capitals really around the country, again, not so much yet in Lansing, but around the country, this is a frontline political issue. And we've actually seen several gubernatorial races where this emerged as a very, very prominent consideration.
Do states that have the possibility of a good amount of severance tax revenue, would they barter down and maybe soften the taxes in order to say, all right, you're going to bring jobs here and kind of do some horse trading with these energy companies?
This becomes a real possibility, especially when you move from an era not that long ago where we talked about peak oil and the end of oil and gas production or the inevitable decline, where producers and states, for that matter, thought perhaps they could set the taxes as high as they wanted to because there would be so much need for that energy. As the supply increases, states clearly, we found, have become much more cautious in how they create these new taxes, how they set their rates, and come up with all kinds of provisions, not only to keep the tax rates constant or relatively low, but provide all kinds of exemptions and credits to get people into the market, to get them into drilling operations. So we've not seen the kind of aggressive increase in taxation that we saw earlier. And again, politically in some cases, making for sort of political fallout. Alaska has just gone through a really, really tough battle over the governorship, which actually still hasn't been settled.
Right.
A ballot proposition, all fought out over how these taxes should be set and how the money should be used.
What does Michigan need to learn from what you've discovered in this study?
Michigan has an opportunity here because the fracking process is moving so slowly. And that gives Michigan, presumably, the chance to learn from the experience of other states. This is a policy arena where, unless we're talking about drilling on federally held lands, it's largely a state or a state and local responsibility for setting the rules of the game, taxation, and everything else. And so we're seeing states on taxation and everything else moving in a number of different directions on this. I think one of the very interesting pieces that's beginning to emerge on this is coming from places like North Dakota, where they are having this bounty, but they are also mindful that when you have boom economies related to energy, there's often that bust. Some even call this a resource curse. Pennsylvania's been through this, other states as well. Michigan experienced this after we did the first cut of timber and had to deal with the aftermath of all of that. Well, North Dakota has dusted off an idea that was in play in a number of Western states in the 1970s, but that is to create a trust fund, not a rainy day fund, but a trust fund. That's a lot more than just a bank account that you can raid. So for all of the revenues that are coming into Bismarck, 30% off the top are taken and put into a trust fund, almost like a lockbox, that the legislature cannot touch until at least 2017. And they're going to take the next several years to think about investment strategies, how to develop that, and perhaps develop a longer term of revenue, both to deal with some of the long-term environmental challenges that might emerge over the coming years in North Dakota where there's extensive drilling, but also deal with that inevitable bust. The only state east of the Mississippi that's begun to move in this direction is West Virginia, which also has a tremendous history of boom and bust. We've not seen that in places like Michigan or Ohio, but there are some real opportunities, I think, to learn from other experiences what to do and what not to do if this is going to go forward.
That whole trust fund idea to a civilian seems eminently sensible. Is the political will, does that become a real political hot potato as far as can they keep their mitts off that money?
Well, it's eminently sensible perhaps in a longer term, but the short-term politics of this can be difficult. I think one of the most interesting places to be politically in the United States, believe it or not, in the first months of 2015 is Bismarck, North Dakota, where the legislature, which only meets a few months every 2 years, it's a part-time legislature, is actually going to be looking at all aspects of this. And I anticipate a long line outside the Bismarck Capitol with groups saying, trust fund is fine, but show me the money now. If you're a local community and your population has doubled or tripled, you have road issues, you have infrastructure issues, the state caps what you can levy on property taxes, you might have public health issues, you have housing questions. In North Dakota, just to use that example, all over the western part of the state, which is shale intensive, the states are saying, fine with the trust fund, but get us more money now. That issue is going to play out and is playing out in state after state. It's already coming up in places like Texas and Pennsylvania. We're beginning to see this on our southern border in Ohio. So that's really one to watch and think about that. So again, the initial appeal of a trust fund sounds great. But politically, do you really want to take the risks of putting all that money into a trust? Well, again, we have history of this in the Alaska case where there are dividends on royalties, which are different than the taxes. And a number of the Nordic countries, most notably Norway, uses a trust fund to fund much of its social welfare state.
It is interesting and clearly well worth Lansing policymakers keeping a close eye on what's done elsewhere, because we know, as you say, we're in the early stages of it here in Michigan, but it's coming.
It's coming.
Barry Rabe, always a pleasure to talk with you, Director of the University of Michigan Center for Local, State, and Urban Policy.
Thank you.